This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
Two wins on the bounce, unbeaten in three, and just 2 points off a place in the top four. Everything is coming up City. What a time to be alive. On today's Blue Moon Podcast, we'll be looking at that win over West Ham, a win that didn't really impress Pep Guardiola.
We judge results. Our performance was not good.
And there was a weird mood inside the Etihad as the game finished in a little bit of a tetchy manner despite the scoreline. So can you understand why fans were edgy towards the end? And can you understand Kevin De Bruyne's frustrations with that atmosphere as well? We'll get into all of that. Plus, that wasn't all Guardiola said in his post-match press conference that caught the eye.
I want the Jack for the time to travel. Yeah, I want it.
That's what he had to say about Jack Grealish this week. We'll hear more and discuss his comments a bit later on too. We'll also preview the upcoming games with Salford City and Brentford. We'll hear from Danny from the Salford podcast One Up Front. While we'll also be joined by Mike from the Brentford show The Ealing Road. They'll both tell us what threats their respective sides pose this week. Lots to discuss, so let's get into it. I'm David Mooney and I am joined by City fan Chris Higginbottom.
Hello there, you okay?
Not too bad, thanks, Chris. Not too bad. And from Sporting News, Dom Farrell.
Hi, mate. I want the version of me from the treble season as well because I feel ill. But,
yeah, sound. Good. So you're not well at all.
Full of it, mate.
Yeah, are you feeling okay, Higgy? You've avoided the lurgy?
I've very much not avoided the lurgy, but I'm at the tail end of the latest bout.
Yeah. Well, yeah, me too. So, good luck, Dom. We're with you all the way through it. You'll get there, I'm sure. I had a thought. We'll preview the Salford game later on, but given their form and City's issues this season, I can understand a few nerves of an upset. So let's get this one out of the way early and then never speak of it again. What's your most embarrassing day following City? Because obviously we're all of an age where there's surely lots of contenders a bit early on in our City supporting life. Maybe not so many in the last few years, but Dom, any most embarrassing days?
Well, so this is the thing you say about being of that age. I struggle to think of any one game that stands out as being the particularly embarrassing moment. You know, it was all part of the tapestry, wasn't it?
There's so many.
Yeah, it's like, I know, like, say, people of my dad's generation would have talked about when they lost to Halifax in the FA Cup or whatever, but when you've actually been down to the third tier and lost league games there, I mean, it's all part of it. An embarrassing day, though, one that sticks out to me, is I think it was the same day that it got announced that Joey Barton had, like, hospitalised Usman Darbo and Taksin Shinawatra. Yeah, that wasn't even the punchline.
Yeah.
Punchline,
nice.
Saws. And Taksin Shinawatra, despite being, like, on the run, having been ousted as Thai Prime Minister, was, like, buying the club. Like, it's like, best player is getting done for GBH on a teammate and a man on the run for, like, horrific crimes is buying the club. It's like, I do remember, like, I remember getting both those bits of news. I was out in town, I was, like, doing some shopping in Market Street, and I do remember having an overwhelming sense of, as an entity, could you just have a day off all year?
Yeah. Mine was, I was thinking more kind of on the pitch when I thought about this, because, and, like, weird, I can't really explain why, but losing 1-0 to Oldham in the FA Cup live on BBC One was quite a one. It's about 2005.
I was there. Coldest I've ever been at a ground.
Yeah.
Horrific.
And Keegan played his first team and Oldham just went, nah, we're going to win this.
It's a very bad team.
Yeah. Higgy, any embarrassing days for you?
Yeah. I mean, from a purely football result point of view, I think you can't go without mentioning 2-2 at home to Liverpool on the final day. Thinking that he didn't need to win and literally urging the side to play into the corners when all we needed was a goal. That's embarrassing. That's, you know, the 4-2 to Spurs FA Cup quarter final at Main Road. Went 1-0 up, conceded 4, invaded the pitch, police horse shat and pissed in the penalty area. Terry Phelan scored a wonder goal which nobody noticed. That was embarrassing. From a more personal angle, I remember going to watch Blackburn, to watch us play Blackburn at Ewood Park in 1993 on a cold December day. And we were in a yellow Austin Allegro, which is embarrassing enough. The fan belt went and we had to stand out of city kit on, and we were stood outside in the cold trying to flag people down to get to the get to the game. That was pretty embarrassing. And of course, sharting at the FA Cup final. I won't expand on that, but yeah, very embarrassing.
What year? You and the police horse.
Yeah. What year? I think it was the game against...
Because if it's Wigan, it's just even... It just kind of topped off that story.
We won. I'm not even sure. We've won so many.
Watford or Stoke, I feel it was like.
Stoke. It would have been Stoke. Yeah.
Nervous day, that, to be fair, though.
It was, and lots of Guinness and not enough food, or indeed changes of underwear.
Yeah. So that Tottenham game was my first game, I think, well, everyone's. It was my first game in the Platt Lane family stand. It was like the grand opening. And yeah, because it's like the nice new stand to take the kids in. And my dad took me along and took me home because of the hooliganism. So I missed Terry Phelan's goal. So yeah.
Yeah, excellent. Don't worry, you're not on your own there.
Yeah. Let's talk about more pressing matters and the issues that are going on at City right now. And in many ways, the tension in the stadium right now, because it did get a bit tense towards the end of the game against West Ham. And I wanted to start by digging into why for that. What Guardiola said about the performance was quite interesting. So let's start with his analysis.
We saw during the years our level. We are not in our level. We won, we are so happy, it will help us. You judge results. Our performance was not good. The first minutes, they were deserved to be 0-1 or 0-2. We were lacking the first goal and very pleased for the result, but you cannot ask me. Is all Manchester City's back? Because if you see the game, it's not. When we attack quick, the opponent attack quicker. So we have to make a build-up, drop them, and have to make 2,000 million passes. And we don't do it. We don't pass the ball. That's why we suffer. And we lose the ball so easy. And that's why they can run.
Now, there's a bit of an indication there about what he wants. When West Ham scored to make it 4-1 and City were giving it away, the feeling in the ground was for City to attack, break forward and go for the fifth goal. There were groans a little bit when City turned down forward passes, trying to play it safe. Maybe that was also because they kept giving it away when they were trying to play it safe. But here's more from Pep on that theory.
In football, you have to run when we don't have the ball. When you have the ball, you have to pass the ball. You cannot run with the ball. You have to pass. And after, when this happened, whoop. The players up front, Phil, like Savinho, like Jeremy, like the players with talent, make after the action. So, and that's why we make a transitions, and that's why we struggle.
Now, he always says that City have to drop opponents, meaning that that they have to force them back into their own defensive third and not let them out. If they don't and they attack quickly, the opponent has the chance to win possession and attack quickly themselves. If they can't get out, then the theory goes that City are stable and are very hard to play against. Have a listen to what Rob Edwards said after City beat his Luton side 5-1 at the Etihad last season.
We knew we were going to be forced low today. They were brilliant. They suffocated us. They controlled the game. And today was the hardest game we've had all season. It would have been, I haven't seen the stats, but it felt like the game was in our final third on it, like the whole time. And we haven't had that against anyone else, really. They forced us so low and we couldn't get out.
And that's what City have tried to do this season, albeit quite badly, with players injured and fatigued. And Guardiola's spoken before about going against what the fans in the stadium want to see. So this is from December 2021, when City won 1-0 against Wolves. So they were down to 10 men, Wolves, that day as well. It was a nervy finish as City dropped to protect the lead, and then they tried to play on the counter for the killer second goal, encouraged by what the fans wanted them to do.
When you win 0 and still to control, we start to run up and down, so we lost simple balls. And we break in this situation because we play at home, because demanding the people. And when that happens, you lose the balls, easy balls. And after the counter-attack, we play with emotion. You know, it's last minute, 1-0, the game is over.
Now, obviously, that's a few years ago, but apply that to Saturday and there's the difference in what Guardiola expects and what the fans are wanting. The stadium wants the fifth goal to kill off West Ham's threat, and there are grumbles when City obviously turn down risky passes, trying to keep the ball and force West Ham to drop, as Guardiola wants them to do. And it led De Bruyne to react into one fan in the East Stand and then him saying this after the game.
I can understand that we are not up to the level, but they should supporting us. You know, the effort is there 100% and we're still winning 4-1, so I don't understand what is happening. It's not like they created a lot of chances either, so it's what it is.
So with all of that said, Dom, do you think a lot of the kind of dissatisfaction around at the moment comes from a difference in what the fans are wanting the team to do, what Guardiola's wanting the team to do, and what the team can actually do right now?
More the third bit of that, because I do think it's a frustration of the fans, but it's just a frustration of the fans from not playing well. I mean, this isn't like in Guardiola's first season when City and, you know, and Claudio Bravo, bless him, would try and play out from the back and everyone was kind of losing their mind. Everyone knows that this style of football, like the one that Guardiola talked about against Wolves, like the one that Rob Edwards observed battered his Luton team, which that's an interesting game to flag up, actually, because that was a game Rodri didn't play in and Kovacic was the holding midfielder, and like theoretically that sort of performance should be possible. Anyway, I don't think we're at a stage now, or we shouldn't be, that after 9 years, people in the ground who go every week are at odds with what Guardiola wants the team to do. I think it's more they're just not doing it well. So, and then when that happens, you think, well, you're not doing all that well. You've got the winger here in Savinho who keeps giving a load of assists to the striker who scores a load of goals. Just do that. So yeah, I mean, I get that. I think it's more a frustration with the performances, the results of this season, rather than an underlying tension between City's style and what fans want. I mean, I hope it's not that, because everyone's not that thick, are they? I mean, everyone's been watching this for years. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, the other kind of element of this, Chris, is it's very easy to go, well, what you're trying to do, you're doing it really badly. So can you try something different, please?
Yeah, it's got to be put into context, really. We're coming out of like the doldrums of a really, really, you know, bad patch. We know what we have been capable of, and you've just scored four. Everyone's getting a bit giddy. It's like, we're back. Come on, just do what you do, guys. Roll them into the ground. And I think there is a little bit of naivety due to the recent upturn after a horrible spell, and people are just like, come on, we deserve this. And I think, Dom, you know, to an extent, yeah, you know, of course people are that thick. Nazis, Coldplay, you can't trust people.
Just for any listeners that aren't aware, that's a reference to Peep Show. You can't trust people because people like Coldplay and voted for the Nazis.
Yeah, probably best to contextualise that.
Not just say Nazis on a podcast, yeah.
Yeah, fair.
I don't think those are Chris Martin's political leanings, to be fair. Seems a good egg overall.
Yeah, that said, I think it's a bit of everything into the mix there. There is a bit of naivety in a crowd when, you know, we feel like we should have our tails up and be battering teams. There is a bit of frustration at recent results and wanting a bit more. De Bruyne, he's entitled to do that. You need him at his kind of. I'd rather he was like that than passive and you know, ambivalent.
Let him talk. Yeah, at the same time, the fans though have every right to be upset with the performances recently, don't they?
Yeah,
every right to express that frustration.
And he's probably frustrated with that as well, and probably thinking, you know, we're doing the right thing here. Get off our backs. Like, this is what you want, right? We're winning in the right way. So start asking us to do it in a way that isn't our conducive to our ethos that has been successful over such a sustained period. So, yeah, I get why the crowd were frustrated and asking for it. And De Bruyne is completely justified in being annoyed by it. And angry De Bruyne is, yeah, much better than an unconcerned, you know, straight-faced, not arsed De Bruyne.
Yeah. Dom, overall, I found that the questions that were put to Guardiola, like, it's baby steps, but, like, are you seeing more from what you want from City and his reaction to it? Like what did you think of the performance? Because to me, the performance, it didn't suggest that City were anywhere near to being back, did it?
I thought the first half hour was as bad as they've been in this entire run. If we're starting the run from losing at Bournemouth in November, I thought they were awful. And then before half time, settled down a bit, scored a really good goal, a brilliant play from Savinho. And then I just thought West Ham kind of self-destructed a bit at the start of the second half, which they tend to this season. And then I thought the last half an hour was abysmal. And they won 4-1. I've never seen a team win 4-1 and come away from it thinking they were crap for an hour of that. And the middle bit, it felt... I mean, I don't want to like not give City any credit, because there were some really good goals scored. They've really done some good things, but I think they started badly and finished badly, and in the middle, they admittedly took their chances and made the most of playing against a poor team. I don't know. There have been games they've lost in this run, which I've thought there were better signs in terms of what's to come next. I mean, we're going to go on to talk about the Brentford game, but I don't know. If you'd seen, like, say, the spirit they showed at Anfield after having an absolute shellac in and sort of steadying themselves a bit, you got something to work with there if you had Brentford after that. You look at how West Ham just stormed through a vacant midfield again and again, like Leicester did. I don't know.
Less so Everton, but very, Everton, yeah.
Yeah, well, they've got no intention of doing that, though, have they? That's a Sean Dyche team. And they probably should have. They could have won it at the end. Listen, at the moment for City, the important thing is getting points on the board and getting some results in there, and the rest of it will come. It was a really interesting press conference to be sitting in because, you judge by results, and because Guardiola hates things being judged by results at the best of times. And it's like, I think we will get onto some of the players, maybe one of the players in particular.
Don't you worry about that, we will.
That first Amazon documentary, where the other thing is, I'll defend you in the press conference, that thing where he says that I think it's after the Wigan FA Cup game, I'll defend you always in the press conference, but in here I'm honest with you. He will defend them in the press conference when there's been a bad result. And I think at Leicester, and certainly after the West Ham game, I think the fact that they won a couple of games, there's a few things he's been wanting to get off his chest.
Yeah, gloves are off sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about some individuals then, Chris, because Savinho's come up a couple of times already, and he was given man of the match in the stadium, got 3 assists. The numbers are much, much better. You must be happy with kind of how he's developed now over the last few weeks.
Yeah, definitely. He did look a bit kind of powder puff initially, and he still needs to up his game in terms of physicality and react better to challenges. And, you know, there's times when he just gives up, spins round, expecting a free kick, and it's like, are you still expecting a free kick for that? Like, I wouldn't have expected a free kick for that when I was 9. What are you doing? But his overall play, in terms of, he's obviously a skillful player. He can pick a pass. I mean, the way he beat was it Soufal for the deep cross. There's no way he should have been able to do that. I mean,
I've not seen anyone knock it one side of a player, run round the other side, and collect it since I was in the playground at school. That's a playground school move.
David White made a career out of it, but he used to do it like at speed, and it'd be a foot race, and that's how he would do it. But this, he kind of just like went chest to chest with him, put it that way, and like managed to buffle and bustle and bimble his way around, and still it came off, and he put an absolutely magnificent cross in. It was a great goal, and I preferred the pass for Haaland's second goal, to be honest.
Yeah.
Such a beautiful way of pass, which really shows more football intelligence, really, than knocking it round someone and swinging your foot round a deep cross. Just to see the run and to pick it out with that, you know, you need to put the weight on the ball and wait in another sense for the run at the right time. The timing and the strength of the pass was just delicious.
I didn't clip this up.
Pleased with him.
Yeah, I didn't clip this up, Dom, but Guardiola said in the press conference afterwards about having Savinho on the left to be able to provide that sort of cross for Haaland with a left footer on the left. Like, he's not done that sort of wing play since about 2017-18. So is that something that he might evolve back into?
Maybe. I mean, he'd probably have to sign a natural right winger in the transfer window. Don't know if the lad Marmoush from Eintracht can do that, if that's happening. Anyway, it was good to see that angle. Like, one thing Guardiola said is that angle of cross for the type of striker Haaland is great. And I think it's been discussed a bit how for such a big unit, Haaland can sometimes look ponderous in the air, but that's 2 nice outswinging crosses towards him in 2 games from a left footer that he's buried. So that's useful. So Savinho spoke to a few of us in the mix zone afterwards, and you can overcomplicate football. He was just talking about how, via an interpreter, He was talking about how he always looks for Haaland. He always wants to look for his runs. I mean, yeah, do that. Because there was Cy Bajkowski's piece this week talking about how Grealish last assisted Haaland in October 2023 and Jeremy Doku has never assisted Haaland, which absolutely blew my mind. Like, it's Erling Haaland and you're a winger. Come on.
It makes sense, though, doesn't it? The way he plays, he cuts in and has players in front of him, there's never a way through. And...
You think eventually at some point one... Well, yeah. To be fair, off the top of my head, I think he had one to Haaland that was a brilliant save from Alisson against Liverpool last season, so these stats can sometimes be a bit harsh, but none. But yeah, Savinho's good, and he came across as a bit of a character as well. He was talking about how he doesn't speak much English, but he said, me and Haaland talk all the time. So I asked him, has Erling got a bit of Portuguese? He's like, oh, no, we speak English. So even though he doesn't speak English, I just like the idea of them two just going around like honking odd words and barking at each other. Yeah, they seem like a fun duo.
Get your ears around our bonus episodes every Monday. patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Let's touch on the other player that's kind of in competition with Savinho at the minute, because it brought up this from Pep on Jack Grealish. Let's have a listen to what he said in the press conference.
Now Savinho's in better shape and everything than Jack, and that's why I played Savinho. I wanted Jack for the travel. Yeah, I want it. But I try to be honest with myself, you know, for that. And what happened with Savinho delivering in the box is higher than maybe the other wingers in that position. And they have to fight. They have to prove, okay, I'm going to fight with Savinho to deserve to play and every single day and every single week and every single month. And that is because I fought a lot for him. I fought a lot to be here to, come on, do it again. And I know I can do it, but I saw him. I saw you level. And I want that. Every single training session, every single game.
That is quite... Bearing in mind that Guardiola...
That's him defending him.
Well, I was going to say, Guardiola doesn't often be so explicitly critical of players. That's a pretty scathing assessment, Chris.
Yeah. And I don't know if he's just being brutally honest or whether it's a ploy to try and get something and, you know, get a better tune out of him, or maybe both, probably both. But yeah, it is pretty brutal to be that open about what he's not seeing. But I suppose it's up to Grealish to up his game. I think Grealish has been harshly treated in some quarters, and you know, you can only be polar one or hard the other, can't you? He's either the only reason we won the treble and he should be playing every game, or he's an absolute joke. Everyone was more important than him in the treble season and can't believe he cost 100 million. Seems like doesn't seem to be any room for nuance or balance. He is important. He keeps the ball really well. When we need that element of control in a game, he's your man. He wins free kicks like nobody else. He's completely different to Savinho, and sometimes we'll need a different option. I think we need to keep hold of him and try and get the best out of him. I think a lot of that's up to him.
I think the other side of it as well is one of the reasons why that treble winning side was so good. You think of the two games in particular that spring to mind, Arsenal and Real Madrid. What we were talking about earlier about City forcing teams to drop and not being able to get out. Real Madrid couldn't get out. There was the stat at half time in that one or something like that. They'd had one touch in City's box and that was it. And a lot of that was down to the fact that when City lost the ball in the final third, they either recovered it quickly or they forced Madrid into giving it them back. But City generally didn't lose the ball, and that was a big reason for forcing the drop. And Grealish was a big part of that. But at the same time, Dom, he hasn't been a part of that now for 18 months going on 2 years.
No, I mean, they were obviously great quotes to get to write up. You know, he's always interested in that sort of form, Pep. But like, I sort of wrote about it that this idea of treble Jack, it's like a kind of, almost like some sort of mythic figure. Is it? It's so long ago, it's not really relevant. And also, that treble team isn't really relevant because, I mean, unfortunately, barely any of them have changed, which might be part of the problem. But like you're right to say in those games, and also there was that 4-1 win against Liverpool where Grealish scored, was the best player on the pitch, was fantastic. And the job he did on the wing in that team, in terms of holding onto the ball, bringing other people into play, when De Bruyne was on the top of his game, when pre-Barcelona Gundogan was there, it worked beautifully. That's not the team now. So if Grealish even does that job really well, how effective is that going to be? Maybe you need a more direct threat like Savinho. But
is that the Grealish now?
Well, even if it isn't, it shouldn't matter. He's enough of a talented player who's shown us various points in his career that he should have been a hell of a lot more useful during a run of one win in 13, as evidenced by that one when he played in midfield against Nottingham Forest.
Yeah,
was fantastic.
I'm glad you said that.
But that was one in a run of five Premier League games he started. His next Premier League start was at Aston Villa. This is the thing with Grealish, and it's quite easy to sort of break it down into he's had half a good season and three and a half crap ones. Last season, when he played, I thought he played well. But there was that start of that game against Copenhagen where they were just liquid football, then he got injured, and Guardiola had a go at him then for not being fit and getting injured again. Also, I mean, the other thing people have talked about lately is he's not scored for a year, which, you know, if I'm going to call out Jeremy Doku for not getting assists to Erling Haaland, not scoring for a year for Manchester City when you're an attacking player,
it's
pathetic. But prior to that, it's got 3-3, and it was like, you've cracked it. He played in midfield against Forest, was brilliant, you've cracked it, but it's like it's one step forward and several steps back. But that middle period of last season when Haaland and De Bruyne were out, Grealish and Foden and Alvarez kind of carried the team through, won them the Club World Cup, got points that meant they won the title. So it's not as simple as he's been useless apart from the treble season. But at the same time, like this, Guardiola's talked a lot about how he won't forget people like Lewis and Bernardo going back to the well again and again during this really bad run. And he's talking about how he fought for Grealish. To me, the inference for that I get is Grealish hasn't fought enough for him to be there when he's needed him. And now, a lot of the players are fit again. Savinho's another guy who's been signed to play in the right wing and is better in the left wing like Doku. So there's plenty of lads who can play there. I would, given the sort of the physical capacity as it's looked of the likes of De Bruyne and Gundogan this year, I would love to see Grealish playing like he did against Forest. Played pretty well there against Juventus overall as well. But is Guardiola going to trust him in there? Is he going to pick him ahead of Doku and Savinho? It's like, genuinely, you think, I put this in the piece about how he's got to, you know, he's got to take his chance against Salford, which sounds like a mad thing to say about an important part of the treble team. But I can see a situation where even if Guardiola changed the whole team, he might not even start against Salford. Say Guardiola wants to play McAtee, O'Reilly, Nunes, Gundogan, Doku. Where's Jack Grealish playing?
Instead of Gundogan.
Well, but he's had a rest though, so Gundogan's going to play against Salford. Yeah, I agree. Grealish, in my mind, I'd have played in central midfield instead of Gundogan all the time. But Gundogan is, again, he's like, for
trusted
all
captain, one of them.
He is one of Guardiola's trusted guys who he's trusted for 9 years. It sounds like he can't trust Jack Grealish as far as he can throw him at the moment. And that's a shame because, you know, I know he's a polarising guy with elements of the fan base, but I think he's a popular guy. I think, don't want to assume too much, but I think all the three of us on here, from speaking to you two about football, I think we would all class ourselves as Grealish guys. But,
I think it says a lot about Pep's character, like the way, I think Gundogan, the way he carries himself in the game, the way he conducts himself out of the game, the way he thinks about football, the way he talks about football, is more aligned with how Pep is as a football man and a human being. And Grealish is kind of lad character, and being a joker is not
that,
really
that goes
like,
against him, doesn't it? When it's like this, it goes against him. Yeah. When he's winning, it's fine. Yeah,
you got a knackered old Gundogan, but I know I can rely on it. You watch Gundogan, you know, even when he's coming off the bench, his mind's writing checks that his body can't cash, kind of thing. His limbs aren't up to the task of what he's trying to do, and he seems to be getting caught out. All you need is a a younger, stronger player against him, and he seems to lose out. And Grealish is the equal of the players that are catching Gundogan, but because Pep knows Gundogan's mindset, he's going to always try to do that Pep thing. He's just always going to go to him, yeah. It's frustrating, and he does have his favourites, but
I'd counter that slightly with Grealish. That yeah, obviously he's the cheeky chap, he's the way he is, and all the rest of it. But I think also when City played, was it Peterborough in the FA Cup, and Foden gave him an assist or vice versa, and he said him and Foden had like been watching Messi videos on the way to the ground about these type of assists. Like I've heard like before he signed for City, he was watching Coutinho and De Bruyne before games. He's an absolute football obsessed.
Oh yeah,
he's totally immersed in it all. And also like I remember Guardiola saying, and this is what I thought of again when he said I fought for him, saying that because obviously there are signings at City which there'll be. You know, they have scouts, all the rest of it. But it felt like Grealish was very much like, he said that Cheeky's in love with him. And like the way that he plays football, the way he can hold him to the ball, has Pauzer and all that jazz.
Is definitely that meaning?
I don't know. I don't know.
And to be fair, I know what you're saying. And Grealish is, you know, has been successfully brainwashed into not being what he's naturally inclined to be in terms of like a roving freewheeling midfielder. He was successfully changed into that holding wing. I hesitate to call him a winger because when he plays on the wing, he doesn't really play as one. But yeah, he does absorb, and I know he's a football guy. And maybe I'm oversimplifying it, but the overall point is that for me, Gundogan is his go-to guy because he's more mentally aligned to what Pep is.
Yeah, I just think with Guardiola, you know, that he was like, you know, he knows about Fraudiola and all that sort of stuff. He will know exactly what everybody is saying about £100 million Jack Grealish. It's like, it's at this stage, it becomes a bit of a personal affront to him. And that, yeah. Again, I just thought that I've attributed about four meanings to it here already, but the fact that he said he's fought for him, I just thought was a very interesting and impassioned way to put it. And yeah. Regardless of how we've got to this point, it's hard not to completely sympathise with and understand Guardiola's frustration because it shouldn't be at this point, at this stage of Grealish's career.
Yeah, he isn't there. Let's find out if he plays against Salford. We will start the previews with a view from this weekend's opponents. I started by asking Danny from the Salford City podcast One Up Front what his reaction to the FA Cup draw was.
Well, I was actually in Southport at the time. I was on holiday and I just watched it live on the BBC or whatever, and I just literally did four laps of the hotel room in absolute delight. But I had a feeling, I didn't know who it was going to be, but I don't think we've got to this round before. I think it's the first we've ever got in the competition, and the fact it was a mega, mega big team as well as being a local team, it was just unbelievable. So dead excited.
Yeah, and obviously coming to the Etihad as well. I mean, in terms of your form at the minute, you probably couldn't be coming in better form either, could you?
Well, we can get into that as deep as you want. Yeah, it's very good form. Results are very good. We don't let in many goals, and there is confidence in the camp. So, yeah, I'm one of those people who I'm definitely not just about results, but yeah, they are pointing massively in the right direction.
I was going to say, you don't let in many goals. You haven't let in any in the last six, which you've won them all. I mean, that's a pretty good record.
Yeah, eight clean sheets in nine since we changed goalkeepers from Jamie Jones, who we brought in, who is, I think, possibly a third keeper at some other team, maybe Middlesbrough, and we replaced him with a young lad on loan, only 18 years old, from Sunderland, who's the England under-20 goalkeeper, and he's been nothing short of fabulous. So hopefully we can keep him for the rest of the season, because he does have, I believe he's got a recall clause, maybe go back to Sunderland in January, but I hope they would understand that he's now our established number one, that keeping him with us is the best thing for his development.
Yeah, for sure. And you certainly look at, you mentioned results versus performances. That's something, I mean, we'll get into that with City in a minute, but yeah. Certainly with you guys, how's it been going at the moment? You've been putting these runs of wins together. From the outside, it feels like that would be imperious. So what are your reservations with the performances then?
Well, It's hard to know where to start. I mean, I've seen all the pre-season games. We've massively changed what we're trying to do, the formation we were trying to play. It was all 4-2-3-1 through the pre-season, and I believe we recruited for a 4-2-3-1 system. And then I think on deadline day, we brought in about three extra strikers, some of whom were really good, some of whom are not that good. And we've now changed it where we like to play... you could call it a 3-1-4-2 or a 3-5-2 generally. And it's working really well. But I just feel that, and I've said this to a few people, it feels that if you look at when our results started picking up, it was around the time of the draw. And the negative Nelly in me is saying, are people trying to nail on a starting place at the Etihad to be able to say, I was there, I played that, you know, telling the grandkids. A very, very negative way of looking at it, but it does seem to coincide now. But that's now been a self-fulfilling prophecy. That confidence is now real, and we are not battering scenes, but we're actually controlling games from start to finish at our own level.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, if it improves the confidence and it works, though, then so be it. Yeah. It's a good thing.
It is. I just think going back to the start of the season, just before we changed system, our XG was 24th out of 24. I'm not massively into stats like that, but the eye test was also telling me that we weren't creating chances, we weren't getting into the final third, and now we've released just one extra player from our back line a bit more upfield, we can seem to camp out more. And we don't do exactly what City do the last time I saw them, where you're basically are playing 90% of the game in the opposition's half, but we get in there, we are controlling that middle third to final third much more than we did at the start of the season.
Yeah, well, City aren't doing that at the moment either, so you don't need to worry too much about that regard. I mean, in terms of City's form, like, do you look at this game and go, you know what, it's a free hit anyway, but there is a chance of an upset here?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, because, I mean, I was on the Blue Moon Forum only 10 minutes ago and looking at all the different starting lineups, and because I don't watch much Premier League football because I spend so much time producing content including my own podcast as well as a fanzine that I edit for independently of the club but about the club, that I don't see much Premier League football, but a lot of the names I thought, who's that, who's this, and I couldn't tell if that's because this is going to be quite a potentially a young rotation team you're going to play out against us. I don't know who McAtee is, don't know who that person is, to be honest, but if we were up against like the superstars, that would make it just even more thrilling, I think, for all the 5,000 that we've brought you bringing to the match.
Yeah, in a weird way, the way City have been playing with injuries and with fatigue and everything like that at the moment, part of me wonders if Guardiola does pick a lineup that is with more of the younger players, then City might have a bit more energy and they might be a little bit more dangerous, you know.
No, I get that, because I always feel that there's something about young players. When I look at my favourite players when they were just breaking through, Ryan Giggs, Wayne Rooney, Michael Owen, they were almost, to me, never better than when they were in that 17 to 18-year-old spell. They obviously got better as footballers, but they were never as exciting, you know, and as full of energy and just trying things. So, yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying.
Yeah. Sticking with Salford then, looking at how you're playing at the moment, who are the players that City need to be wary of?
I'm not saying unfortunately, but I would say the majority of our best players, absolute top-end players, are defensive-based. Talked about the goalkeeper, Matty Young. Incredible. We've got a centre-half who's also on loan, so that's a little bit of an issue when your better players are on loan because they can be taken away at a moment's notice. He's on loan. He's called Stefan Negru from Oxford United. He's been incredible for a 21-year-old. Absolutely brilliant. And we've also, I would say, are probably... player of the season so far has been our defensive midfielder, Osama Ashley, who is just, he's like the N'Golo Kante of League Two. He does that single DM role on his own. He patrols touchline to touchline and sweeps everything up. So they are our best players for probably getting us results. But I think our best player going forward is Hakeeb Adeleken, who was brilliant last season for Doncaster. And we've signed him on a one-year contract. And when he's been fit, he's an absolute game changer. So that's probably our best four players in the squad.
Yeah, where are you worried about? Where are you weakest at the minute?
Our formation, when I said we're playing a back three, you may have presumed, or listeners may have presumed, oh, they've got three centre-halves. Well, we've got one. We play because the other two, and I know City do funny things with John Stones and move him here, there and everywhere, and is he a right back, is he a this, whatever, I understand all that. But we, for multiple weeks now, almost multiple months, have played full backs or wing backs as our wide centre backs. And the average full back is a bit quicker and better on the ball, and it helps in that respect. But in terms of actually standing up to a physical presence, which I imagine most of your players will have in compared to us, we may suffer in the aerial duels and we may get out muscled. So that for me, our wide centre-backs, because Stefan Negri plays as our middle centre-half, that's where I think we might be able to be hit.
Yeah. What are you hoping to see from Carl Robinson at the weekend? Because obviously, if you've got a system that's been working well and been getting results, it's one thing. But then to suddenly have to do that against a Premier League side, it might be something a bit different. So what are you hoping to see from him?
Well, I think even though I can sometimes be a bit of a Debbie Downer, I think that the team will be confident no matter what happens. I think everybody will want to be and give the best in such an environment. But I did find something very interesting that he kind of, the way he expressed himself after our last win on the weekend, he didn't talk about this game. He was talking about our next home game as if that was the most important thing. That's a league game. It's 3 points. It's not kind of a hit and a giggle in the cup. So for me, I looked at that as Carl saying that, because I think he'll probably still look at our, if we extend our goalless streak for the next few weeks after playing Man City, but get heavily beaten by yourselves, I think he'll almost look at that as meaningless, because I don't think he wants his players to lose confidence. I'm sure we will likely concede a lot of high danger chances. They might not go in, you know, but I think you'll be able to get behind our back line. I think you'd be quicker than us, more athletic than us. We won't have seen anything like that before. None of these players will. So I think Carl is going to motivate him, but I think he's just going to say, enjoy it. And then we'll get back to the league for Fleetwood the week after.
Yeah. Speaking of the league, what are you hoping for this season? Obviously, currently in third, very much level with Crewe in second, just ahead of Port Vale in fourth, but with a game in hand on them. You could come up this season.
We could. I would say until we went on this run, I didn't even have us down as a playoff team, because I think. Looking at it as I have, which is, as I've said, sometimes a little bit negative. Sometimes it's proved right, sometimes it's proved wrong. I think we've got square pegs in round holes. I've already talked about full-backs playing centre-back multiple times. Sometimes having midfielders playing centre-back as an emergency measure, and it's very odd. But if we can maintain this and do a Leicester, because if Leicester can win the Premier League, admittedly, with some N'Golo Kante, they had a good goalkeeper, Vardy, if they can like avoid the gravitational pull that should happen to a team like them, and they won the Premier League one season, then I think if we can carry this on and nothing interrupts our rhythm, we could possibly get an automatic spot. I'd be blown away by that, because we started the season so poorly, but who knows?
Yeah, definitely. Danny, let's have a prediction for this game. We've got the charity bet coming up. I am notoriously rubbish at predictions, so when we have guests on, I like to hand mine over to them. So what are you going for? What's your score for this one?
Okay. I feel we've got the luck behind us. I think we'll probably concede at least one goal, but I've just in the same way that I had a feeling we're going to draw somebody big, and we did. We might sneak a late winner and win 2-1, which would be scenes. That would be a thing.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
Email the show through our website, bluemoonpodcast.com.
That was Danny from One Up Front. We're back to two games a week now, which means City also play on Tuesday evening away to Brentford. So we're now joined by Mike Johnston from the Ealing Road podcast. Hi, Mike.
Hi, David. How are you, mate?
Yeah, not too bad, sir. Not too bad. You've seen Dr. Southampton. They've sorted you out good and proper. What's the mood like after that 5-0, I know?
Yeah, I think it was a long time coming. It's only taken until 2025 to get our first away win of the season. And I think going into it, it was definitely one where if we didn't win, then that kind of hoodoo of are we ever going to win away this season would definitely still be there. But I think, you know, I've heard a lot of the discourse post Southampton, and it's all about how bad Southampton were, and they were they were terrible, like genuinely probably the worst team I think we've played since being in the Premier League in terms of when we came up all those years ago. But no, they were awful, but we were really good as well. It was nice to see the kind of frontline firing, keeping a clean sheet as well. So the spirits are high. It was a long time coming though.
Yeah, Higgy, when you consider that City just about squeaked past Southampton 1-0 at home, it feels like different confidence levels right now.
Yeah, definitely. We didn't look like world beaters against Brentford, really, at home. I'm not that confident based on the West Ham game. Brentford always give us a good game. I think it's fair to say they seem to be still on an upward trajectory since getting rid of since Tony. Really, the level of football seems to have necessarily improved without having that focal point. And as an all-round team, they just seem to be pretty effective. Obviously, you get the few blip results here and there. But yeah, they're always a formidable opponent, and I am nowhere near massively confident, put it that way.
Yeah. Mike, you've seen City's form. I mean, unbeaten in three now, so you must be back to being scared of them now. On a run like this, obviously, you must be scared of them now.
I think, I don't think, I've watched the Leicester game and the West Ham game when I was at work, but no, I don't think I've seen enough yet to suggest that the rot has really stopped.
It's not at all. Don't worry about it.
The West Ham game, obviously 4-1, but they had enough chances for it to be the other way around potentially. But I mean, you know, the thing that I think is key, and obviously there's, you know, the injuries and the aging squad, and there's been so much made about City this season because of the drop off and how drastic it's been. But I think De Bruyne getting back to fitness, Savinho actually starting to put some numbers up behind his performances as well, Haaland in the goals again. So I mean, I'm not saying you're back, because I don't think you are. I think having watched the last two games in particular, I think Leicester played really well, so did West Ham. So I don't think you're back. And I think it does come at a good time for us, because we've just had two results at home against Forest and Arsenal, where we'd only kind of played teams at home below us in the league, and then we kind of had the tests against Forest and Arsenal, and Forest were brilliant. Arsenal kind of blew us away in a 10-minute spell in the second half. So I think we kind of need the next step down from the top three in the league. And I think that probably is where City are at the moment. So no, I'm not scared, as scared as I would have been in previous years. The last two games, I don't think the scoreline has maybe reflected the City performance. I don't know if you guys agree.
Yeah, Dom, when you think from a City point of view going to Brentford for this one, City, we know, we've said all season they don't like teams that break through the middle and can basically keep possession. City fans should probably be nervous about this one.
Yeah, City haven't looked good against far worse teams than Brentford, and I know that Brentford, like I said, the Southampton win, which did seem to flatter Southampton massively. I mean, just going off match of the day, it should have been about 24-0. But I think obviously a lot of the folks will be on someone like Brian Mbeumo, who's having an amazing season, and our City have often struggled on the break against pacey attackers. But I think what's more of a problem at the moment is you look at that midfield of Damsgaard, Jensen and Nørgaard, like really good players. And then you look at that sort of vortex where a defensive midfielder is supposed to be in the Manchester City team at the moment. I mean, I reckon those three are could have a lot of fun in this game. Brentford's form hadn't been great before Southampton, but Leicester and West Ham's form have been dreadful, and City beat them but managed to make them both look quite good, could easily have not won both those games.
Yeah,
Obviously City are getting players back now in various forms of disrepair or otherwise. They'll you know, most of the first team will get the weekend off against Salford, you'd imagine. So it should be the freshest lineup for a while. And that the injury list, in terms of obviously the weight of people like Diaz and Rodri being on it, is huge. But the injury list is smaller. So that there's the capacity for it to be a vastly improved performance, but it's going to have to be.
Yeah, we heard from Danny earlier on, Chris, about Salford, and I'm really not sure where Guardiola should go for that one this weekend on the basis of if he picks the first team players that he has been picking, then, I mean, they all need a rest, they're all fatigued, they're all full of injuries. There's more experience there, but there's so much less energy. If he picks a rotated side, then suddenly City could actually look quite good with the youth and inexperience, but they have that inexperience that could end up getting them knocked out. I don't know.
Well, Pep being Pep, he'll probably go extremely hard at it in terms of very strong lineup to try and secure the result. And then only when he feels relaxed enough will he bring on McAtee with 89 minutes gone or something like that. But I mean, yeah, you would hope we'd better blow the Amis out of the water fairly. This is fantasy, isn't it? But you know, we can dream. You'd think that we would have this game put to bed early enough for us to be able to rotate and give some of the more senior players a rest, assuming that he will start them. And I think that he will. I don't think he'll ring massive numbers of changes just due to the fact that he never does. I'd like to see it. I'd like to see McAtee start, and then.
Do you not think he would go with certainly McAtee, but maybe also given that you look at
Grealish
the League
in
Cup.
The middle.
Well, I'm just looking at the League Cup game against Spurs earlier in the season. He went with Nico O'Reilly in that, and then Jacob Wright came on. Like, those sorts of players could maybe come in from the start, given the injury problems.
Yeah, they could. Yeah, that'd be. You'd think that'd be the sensible thing to do. I don't know. He always seems to confound conventional logic. And, you know, overall, it works. So, as mere mortals, you just got to get on with it and say, yeah, great. You just accept it. But where we're at, even if he does start some youngsters, that could be counterproductive anyway. If he's just resting the likes of Gundogan to start them against Brentford, is that really what we want? I'd rather, to be honest, that he started with his trusted old guard against Salford, get the game out of the way, then introduce some youngsters and give them a chance to, you know, prove themselves worthy of more than a bit part against Brentford. It was notable against West Ham that after an hour that Gundogan and Walker came, we instantly looked more vulnerable. We instantly looked slower in body and mind, and you could tell the crowd could see it coming. The players felt it. The opposition felt it. And Brentford will be licking the lips if we play like Gundogan
like
and Walker. Yeah.
Mike, Thomas Frank has consistently made it difficult for City in the games that they've played against each other. How do you think he'll be thinking about this one? Because he often neutralises what City's threats are. But at the moment, it doesn't feel like there's a lot to neutralise.
Yeah, it was weird. In the reverse fixture, it was the first time I'd seen Thomas Frank go man for man in the press. And I think you guys won that day. But it was that first kind of half an hour, 20 minutes before Haaland gets the equaliser. It was weird to see how high up we were pressing City. And this was before the rot. So it was kind of like maybe he saw something before anyone else did. It's interesting because, you know, the wounded animal at the moment. So it's sort of like how will he approach it? And I'm intrigued to know the approach from the offset. Is it going to be the same? We need to get in a man-for-man press in the final third of the pitch so that we can cause damage in the middle areas, in the central areas, like City have been vulnerable. And I will point out Mikael Damsgaard. I don't know if you guys have watched any of him this season, but he has been absolutely amazing. He's just completely exploded this season. And if he's operating in those pockets where Gundogan is and in between the centre-halves and the holding midfielders, he's going to cause a lot of problems because he has been doing that regardless of the opposition this season. So it's going to be interesting to see how he utilises him. If he gives Damsgaard a free role, which he's been doing this season so far, I think it could cause City a lot of problems. But I mean, Brentford's whole mantra is get the ball into the box, get it into central areas and get chances of high quality. I think if you look at Brentford's chance or XG this season in terms of how high our XG is and the best quality chances. We've got the highest in the league by some way. So we're all about getting the ball into central areas and creating high quality chances. So there's definitely going to be an emphasis on that. I'm just intrigued to know whether, you know, we show City a bit of respect or we just try and kind of not get the game done in early on, but sort of go gung-ho and just kind of go, we're going to try and score more goals than you, because we, you know, we're terrible at keeping clean sheets. We've not kept one clean sheet at home this season. So it's definitely going to be a good watch. But I'm just intrigued to know whether he kind of changes his approach or it's the same as the reverse fixture.
Yeah, in a weird way, I'm kind of wondering, you know, if showing City respect would be the worst thing you could possibly do, because, like, at the moment, like, if you can get in behind City and you can cause some problems, City don't have a response. Dom, you were about to leap in.
I was going to say I don't expect that at all. I mean, I think one of the things that Thomas Frank rightly gets a lot of credit for is he's a very pragmatic manager. He plays the situation both with his team and with the opposition. You know, Higgy's already mentioned how Brentford, you know, to the neutral, just look a far different and far more watchable and exciting team without Ivan Toney there, because there's so many more different angles of attack. I've already mentioned Damsgaard there from Mike, but like I'm a bit of a fanboy of all that Brentford midfield, to be honest. I think they're all cracking. And I think, as you say, the fact that he went for City when the rot hadn't set in. Now, obviously, on this podcast, you've been over and over. I think, you know, this decline has been in the post probably since Istanbul. But yeah, at that point, City-Brentford, that was not a game where you thought City would get sort of rattled, and they really did. If he was going to go for City then, why on earth, with this great home record, with the state City are in at the moment, would he not
go for them now? Yeah.
Of course, the other side of that is, and I know Guardiola doesn't like playing in transition, but he's going to get forced to a little bit this game. And, you know, Savinho and Haaland have actually done all right in those situations. Well, no, they've done better than all right. They've been combining for a load of goals over the last two games. So I think if City were to get a result in this game and were to pull off a win, it would be in a way that Guardiola doesn't really envisage. It would just have to kind of happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Mike, you've mentioned the midfield quite a lot. Who are the players that are causing damage for the opponents at the moment for you? Who's really informed you? Damsgaard is obviously the headline, but beyond that,
honestly, I cannot stop speaking about Mikael Damsgaard. Every single week, he just continues to surprise me. But I don't really know why I'm surprised anymore. He's just from when we signed him a couple of years ago, the injury problems. He looks a bit slight. You'd never think that he'd be a player to be causing opponents so many problems. But honestly, just watch our highlights from the last 6-7 weeks. He's at the heart of everything good we do. So yeah, Damsgaard is amazing. He's the next one that I think we found. And then obviously, just a bit further up from the midfield, I think our front three has been really, really good this season, and Bumo and Wiese get all the plaudits, and rightly so. It's kind of, you mentioned sort of Ivan Toney going, and that meaning our playing style has been adapted a little bit. In the game where we beat you guys in 2022 at the Etihad, we were way more direct, and we've kind of adapted completely to the opposite side now. I think now we've kind of consolidated that Premier League status, and we're not kind of looking over our shoulder anymore. We're playing the ball along the ground a lot more. The front three are dynamic. They switch. Wissa comes deep. Brian Mbeumo hugs the touchline. He's always cutting in. So the areas where we can hurt teams and where have hurt teams this season is going forward. It's just defensively sometimes where we're a bit, there are lapses of concentration and we concede a lot of goals. But I think the kind of message this season has just been try and outscore the opposition. And if we do, then we'll be in a good place. But yeah, Wissa and Mbeumo, Damsgaard, Sharda, they're all very, very good players.
Yeah. Chris, Mike's saying about getting the ball into the box concerns me a little bit, on the basis that, I mean, Ruben Dias injured, John Stones injured, Ake, Akanji, both are playing but look injured to me. They don't look like they can move properly. If that ball keeps coming into City's box, it doesn't feel like City are going to be able to keep repelling it, does it?
No. So it's up to the rest of the team to prevent that happening. And on current observation, we don't look massively, or we're certainly not optimally capable of doing that in the way that we've become accustomed over the last few years. I'm cacking it a bit, to be honest. it's my professional...
professional opinion, is that?
Yeah, or non-professional.
Nathan Cackey.
Nathan Cackey. Kyle Walking.
I mean, I don't wish to make you feel worse, Chris, but after Brentford, City's run of Premier League fixtures, Ipswich, Chelsea, Arsenal, Newcastle, Liverpool, Spurs, Forest, Brighton. I don't think they're not going to win any of them, are they?
I don't know. I'll tell you after Brentford. I mean, we've got a lot to improve, haven't we? January may be a portentous window. I don't think it will be, but it might. I'm fully sitting in the camp of I don't expect anyone to come in, so surprise me. But you never know. You never know. I mean, some of those teams you mentioned, you're talking about Ipswich, and we're not never going to win a game. I mean, come on.
Away at Portman Road, they've. I mean, they did Chelsea there.
Oh, all right, we are never going to.
Dom, you look at, like Mike was saying before, the home game against Brentford this season, it was difficult. City weren't a bin fire of a team then. What can Guardiola do in this over these two games? Because obviously the Salford game, I don't want to say takes care of itself. They are a League Two side. It will be an upset if City lose that one. But it's like there's a lot of people looking over the shoulder thinking, like, there is the chance of an upset this weekend because of the way City have been playing. And then that going into this tough trip at Brentford, it feels like Guardiola's got the weight of the world on his shoulders at the minute.
Yeah, but I think you've got to be realistic that it is a League Two side against what had been until a few months ago the best team in Europe over the last 7 years. Mm. So I know the drop's been startling, but I reckon there should be enough to beat Salford City, if I'm being honest. Also, that brings us round to, I mean, I know he thinks about match rhythm and that they'll have had a lot of days off. So he might pick a strong team against Salford, but I honestly think it's just got to be the Carabao team. I think you switch everyone out. I think Ake and Akanji, with the work they're going to have to get through at Brentford, need putting in a cryogenic chamber, and you pick Simpson Pusey, Caden Braithwaite, Andy Morrison, whatever. get them away from that Salford game.
I did wonder which ex-centre-back you were going to pick on, and Andy Morrison was top of my list.
But if you start with a heavily weakened team and they get the first goal and the universe starts to crumble into dust around us, the repercussions from that?
Maybe, but just grow up and win the game. I don't know. There's no... And that might be harsh if you're picking like a 17-year-old centre-back. Actually, grow up and win the game. But
literally, before our very eyes,
yeah,
please.
Yeah. Come on, can you buy a pint? I think this is the thing with City at the moment, with the age of the team, with the fact that the pressing has gone to bits and that no one really seems to know what they're doing out of possession, and the big Rodri-shaped hole. There are no perfect solutions, but Ake and Akanji have to be there at Brentford for there to be any sort of a solution here, I think. I don't know, maybe is there a signing in? Who knows by then? But yeah, I think I would be happy to risk the idea of the humiliation of losing to the class of 92's pet project is vile. But I think you risk that and just think, look,
you've got to think bigger picture, haven't you? Yeah.
There's a reason you've put all this money into an academy, and it isn't to beat Salford City, but it's so you've got capable football players and they've got a really hard Premier League game. It's all tight, chasing the top four. They've got to go to Brentford and try and get a result. And I think the best chance of doing that is, I don't think real. I mean, obviously he can. He's done these sort of things before. But I don't think realistically you can, with some justification, complain about injuries all season and then play senior players who pull hamstrings against Salford and be up shit creek again at Brentford. There comes a point. I know Guardiola had a lot of stick, like, for picking young lads and not picking Simpson Pusey in Premier League games. I can see his logic for asking Nathan Ake to go to the well and things like this over this period to get a couple of wins on the board. I totally see the logic there. I do not see any logic in either of Ake or Akanji, or maybe plenty of others who've done loads and loads of games. I don't see any logic them playing against Salford whatsoever. If people who are in and around the first team squad can't get a job done against a League Two vanity project, then what are you doing?
Yeah.
I hope you're right.
Mike, obviously you've mentioned the defence a few times as kind of a little niggling doubt in the back of your mind. City have got, like, Haaland has started scoring again a little bit in the last couple of games. Savinho's started to get a bit of put up a few more numbers than he has done previously. Is it a big enough worry for you to be that concerned about this game, given that City's recent form has been as it is? Or like, how are you defending at the moment?
Well, Southampton was good, but they were terrible. So there's not much you can take from that. Their attacking threat was minimal to none. So you can't not be scared with an attack that's got Savinho, Haaland and Silva and all these other players. You can't just take that for granted just because they're out of form. They're players that can hurt you in any way at any time. Like, I think Foden started to score now as well. I'm not sure how he's playing individually, but at least he's getting on the score sheet again.
Not brilliantly, but yeah.
But still, you know, as Dom said, you know, best team in Europe for the last 7 years. It's not like players, especially when they're that age, the Haalands, the Savinhos, the Fodens, they don't just drop off and never come back. He's a PFA player of the season for a reason last year. So it's not that City are out of form and their attackers are terrible and that Brentford are going to run away with a huge win. Obviously, I'm still worried about the attacking threat that you've got and the fact that we've not kept any clean sheets. We've only kept two clean sheets this season, one at Everton and one against Southampton, both teams struggling against relegation. It's weird because I don't actually think we've defended badly. Like, I would actually say Nathan Collins has been one of our players of the season, but it's just sometimes we're just a little bit clumsy, some lapse of concentration. There's been a few times where there's been back passes that haven't reached Mark Flecken. There's doubts over Mark Flecken, to be honest. I know he's been really good.
Oh, God, I forgot about Flecken. Goodness me, every single time against City, isn't he?
Well, yeah, I mean, his
ridiculous.
Yeah.
His coming-of-age performance last season after David Raya left was against City when he made about a million saves in the first half alone. But there's still, for me, question marks around him. I know he's been really good in people's fantasy football teams this year, but Brentford fans will tell you that he's not. It's a steep drop off from David Raya to go to Mark Flecken, and they're both really good with their feet. But in terms of like raw attributes and what you want in a goalkeeper, there are still some doubts over him. And the big one is we've not got any fucking fullbacks. Like, we just don't have any.
Rico Henry. Join the club.
Rico Henry tore his ACL in October last year at Newcastle. He was supposed to be back in October this year after the international break. I don't think we're ever going to see him again. Aaron Hickey, the same thing. He's been out for a season. We're not going to see him again this season. So that's an area where City can hurt us in terms of the fullback positions, because both of our first choice fullbacks are out long term injury. So yeah, it's not something. I'm not looking at City's attack and being like, yeah, we can defend well against these. It's more what I said last time in terms of, if we're going to win, we need to score more goals than you and not really worry about how poor we're going to be defensively at times.
Yeah. Right. Well, we can put it off no longer. Charity back time. We had no winners on last week's show, so we're still on £715 for the season. William Hill is giving us 3 £10 correct score singles. The winnings are going to the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group. We will start with that game against Salford. We heard Danny earlier on predict that Salford were going to nick it 2-1. If that happens, it's 80-1 and £800 for charity if he's right. Higgy, give us the good news. What are we going for you?
Well, for Salford, I'm expecting big things. So, given that, and also wanting to make KC vomit into his own lap, I went for 6-1, but it turns out Dom had already had that same thought. I'm assuming the motivation was to ruin KC's day on that one as well.
It's just that it's a familiar scoreline to some of the Salford City hierarchy, so I thought it might
I think he was being more of a Bert, but there we are. Yeah.
Nice, fair.
Yeah.
But given that was taken, I've gone for 5-0. You're not having a goal.
5-0 instead is 8-1 and £80 if you're right. We've already heard, Dom, you've gone 6-1, yes?
6-1.
6-1 indeed. That's 25-1 and £250 if you're right. That brings us to the terrifying prospect of going away to Brentford. We will start with Higgy. What are you having for this one?
I think it's got some goals in it for the reasons we've just explored in the chat. And I've gone 3-2 to City, just edging it, although I would not be surprised if it was the other way around.
Well, 3-2 City is 16-1 and £160. No spoilers, you are the only one who has predicted a City win, because, Mike, you are going for
3-1 Brentford, I'm going.
3-1 Brentford, that's 35-1 and £350 if you're right. Dom, give us the bad news.
I've gone 3-0 Brentford and given them the... I wasn't aware I'd given them the first home clean sheet of the season, but there you go. Happy New Year.
Yeah, wow. That's 66-1 if it comes in, and £660, which just makes me think
this week.
It just makes me think that the bookies aren't watching City at the moment. That's why. Just makes me think that the bookies are going, "Ah, well, it's City, they'll probably win." Yeah, what 3-0? Yeah, 6-1, that'll do. But no, 66-1 for a Brentford 3-0. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for information on how to gamble responsibly, take a look at begambleaware.org. Mike from the Ealing Road podcast, thank you very much for being with us today.
Cheers, guys. Nice one.
Get a dollop of City nostalgia every Monday. Sign up at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Now, when City take on Salford City on Saturday, it'll be the fifth time that they've faced a fourth-tier side since that division was rebranded as League Two in 2004. All four of the other games have come during Pep Guardiola's time at the club. Here's Sam Rosbottom with a look at that record.
It took nearly 15 years after the fourth tier's rebrand as League Two for City to draw a team from that division in any of the cup competitions. The first time it happened was in 2019.
But start of the season, we were predicted mid-table, and I think that's kind of where we're looking at finishing. Yeah, I think the FA Cup run has become the focus for us this season now.
That's Rhys Warren from the 1912 Exiles podcast, which covers Newport County. City travelled to Rodney Parade in the fifth round of the FA Cup in 2019, on their way to lifting the trophy. And Rhys told the podcast that that year, Newport had become a giant killing specialist.
It's a proper old-fashioned ground, so it might not have the comforts that modern Premier League players expect when they get there. It's quite uncomfortable. Middlesbrough really played into our hands. They played a lot of straight balls over the top to us, which we dealt with pretty comfortably. I think where we've struggled, and I think it's a worry coming to play Man City, is we've struggled with teams that run at us. And with the talent you guys have got, could really be a problem.
It was a problem. And City ran out 4-1 winners. In fact, 4-1 is a bit of a theme with these games, because that's how it finished against the next League Two team as well. That was Port Vale at the Etihad in the FA Cup third round in January 2020. On the podcast, we spoke to Vale fan Rob Fielding.
We've had a few sort of tumultuous seasons. We've had flirtations with going out of the league. We've had some pretty controversial owners. And we've got new owners in who came in the summer. They're Vale fans. They want to see the club progress and they want to stay with us long term. And I think we were just expecting stability this season, but we're actually looking at the upper side of the table rather than looking at the relegation spots. So we're quietly happy with what we're doing at the moment. And obviously, this tie is a massive bonus for us. It's a real glamour tie and something we didn't really expect. We've got nothing to lose here. We can walk away with quite a lot of money, which will help us next season. We could walk away with a massive shock that will get us all over the newspapers. Or we can just hopefully hold our heads and come away with it defeated, but with money in the bank.
The only meeting with a League Two side that didn't finish 4-1 is up next. Even though it ended 3-1 at Cheltenham in 2021, that doesn't tell the whole story, as City were behind late in the game and all three of their goals came in the final 9 minutes. After the game, Pep Guardiola was relieved.
This competition, one game, when you play away, they play at home, so it's normal. We had the chances, again, one against one, two or three, so clear. I knew from my experience, we played against Newport 2 seasons ago, we fouled and we won the last minutes in the second half. Against Wigan, our second season, we were out. So we know, FA Cup, that's why it's nice. Everyone can beat everyone.
Because of COVID restrictions at the time, City had to use the bar at Cheltenham as the changing room. Guardiola was asked about it before the match.
Please, only I ask to Cheltenham, don't leave beers in the bar, please, before the game. So we'll be delighted to change it in the bar, but not alcohol there, because we want to win the game and we want to be in the perfect warm-up and the perfect condition.
Have you ever come across anything like that before?
Of course. Every once we come from the low divisions, my friend. Would you believe when we play in the under-18, 16, we fly in private jets? So we play in these stadiums all our careers. Don't play all the time in bigger stages. We come from Cheltenham. People cannot forget it, and it's a pleasure to play. We know it.
There was another encounter with a League Two side the following season too, making it 4 years in a row for a game against a fourth-tier side. This time, City were travelling to Swindon in the FA Cup third round. We spoke to Dan Hunt from the Loathed Strangers podcast.
This game is really for the fans. We've been for a pretty torturous period under a pretty despicable man owning the football club. And the fact that we're no longer worrying about being solvent, we're no longer worried about people suing the club for unpaid contracts, we're no longer worried about zero communication from the club. The focus purely is on having a fantastic night under floodlights. And that one glimmer that you always cling on to is that, you know, three-word phrase, magic. Oh, four-word phrase. Magic of the cup.
Once again, City ran out 4-1 winners. Shock. As a Premier League side, City have played a fourth-tier team one other time, knocking Barnet out of the League Cup in 1994. After a shock 1-0 defeat at Underhill, City won the second leg at Main Road by a scoreline of, yes, you guessed it, 4-1. City were on the receiving end of an upset in 1996, losing both legs of a League Cup tie with Lincoln. But this was after their relegation from the top flight. Meanwhile, in their FA Cup runs in the 98-99 and 99-2000 seasons, they progressed past fourth-tier Halifax Town, Darlington and Chester City. In case you were wondering, that game at the Diva Stadium in the third round also finished 4-1 to City. Given the patchy form of the last few months and given that Salford City have won their last six games, all of them without conceding a goal, there's always the worry of an upset. But while in the Premier League, City have never been knocked out of the cups by a League Two team.
Hello everyone, it's Mark Kennedy here and you're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
You're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast. You've made it this far, so don't give up now.
That was Sam Rosbottom talking us through City's games against previous League Two sides. We're going to finish with the listener questions. No jingle because Higgy's on the show this week. You can get
it live.
You can do it live if you want, Higgy, but we won't force you. You're not well.
Ooh, it's a jingle.
There we go. That'll do. Get in touch, Twitter and Blue Sky at Blue Moon Podcast. You can email through the website or you can email contact@bluemoonpodcast.com. Mark gets in touch on the emails first to say, who should play as a striker this weekend or down the line if Haaland gets injured? Is the only option Foden as a false nine? The only other person I remember playing this role this season was Milo Hamilton in pre-season and he's currently on loan at Middlesbrough.
I've got some bad news for Mark. Micah Hamilton has been sold to Middlesbrough, so they're probably not going to let him play at the weekend.
Yeah.
Guardiola's mentioned McAtee as well. There is also Devin Mubama, isn't the lad who signed from West Ham, who's basically an EDS signing, but he made a couple of benches. I think he was on the bench for the Derby and around then with injuries. Who is like a normal centre-forward, so maybe he plays.
I think Grealish is the obvious answer there. Goldmine Jack.
Yeah, the absolute goldmine that is Jack Grealish.
Yeah, you've not scored for a year. Can you score against a League Two team?
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, Chris, it raises the point. Like, if Haaland were to get injured, would City just simply switch back into the false nine setup? But like, maybe in a season where things were working out perfectly and the form was fine, you can go, okay, well, they'll just flick that switch. But this season, like, does that overcomplicate things again?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you kind of inevitably have to switch to the false nine without one. As to who would it be? Yeah, you mentioned Foden. Maybe. I think it'd just be... I don't think you'd play with anyone particularly assigned to that role. It'd just be one of three kind of trying to get into that zone and work the position and try to create openings for one of Foden, maybe Doku, someone coming in.
Yeah. This is a question that I sent into the City Ramble, so apologies if you've listened to their show. I haven't listened to it yet, so I don't know what the answers were to this. But I thought we'd do it here as well. What's the best goal scored by a City player with the shortest name? So to clarify for this one, I don't mean only goals by Joe. You can pick better goals by players with longer names, but you have to justify the extra letters, if the extra letters are worth the step up. So the best goal scored by the player with the shortest name. Dom.
You sent the question into your own podcast.
Yeah, I know. Vanity project, isn't it?
Right, so, I mean, obviously I'm not aware of what the scoring criteria is here, so I've tried to play it safe by going for a very short name. I've gone with Mark Vivian Foe's second goal against Aston Villa on Boxing Day 2002.
Yeah.
Which is mainly in there because Ali Benarbia plays an absolutely ludicrous, like, scoop chip pass over the defence. Up there with his scoop back heel, Sean Goater at Gillingham.
Yes.
For people who are Ali Benarbia assist nerds, I am one of you. It's incredible. Also, the finish is good because Foe takes it in his stride and then has to slide to finish. And it's
he so desperately won't use his left foot. That,
It's one of the great examples I've ever seen of I am not using my weakest foot, and like I'll go to absurd lengths not to. But yeah, so Foe has a three-letter name because Benarbia's pass is just chef's kiss.
Perfect, fits the bill, Chris. Can you justify the extra letters to get us up to Jensen?
Such was the quality of Kare and Gabritsen's four. No, I'm joking, of course. Niall Quinn scored an absolute peach away at Luton, where took the ball on the and then sort of on the half turn, it flicked up, and he volleyed it in from about. Oh, it felt like memory adds a few yards every time I think of it, but must be 35 yards. Absolute peach. And more recently, one of my favourite City goals, not just because it's recent, but it's just one of the best goals you'll see. Oscar Bobb away at Newcastle.
Yes. Oh. Yeah, yeah. Only four letters as well. Holds it in really, really good stead. Yeah.
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 That'd be my ultimate.
That was pass. Really neat feat as well around the goal. Like that was
the De Bruyne pass and the context of the game and the fact that you know, we really needed to turn it round to get the league back on track, and for such a young man to compose himself, make the run in the first place, and like you say, the feat. I mean, oh my God, just ridiculous. We can't get him back soon enough.
Yeah. Oscar Bob could be the answer to the first question actually when he's fit. He can play false nine.
Yeah,
that's a good shout. Yeah, yeah.
Do we know when he's back? I mean, it's around now, isn't it?
Yeah, it mustn't be far off, actually.
But the classic, new signing return from fitness.
Yeah. The manager's famously really good at injury updates, so yeah.
we'll find out in about 4 months. Yeah. final question then comes from Sam on Blue Sky, Sam, I don't know how old you are, mate, but I think this speaks to a fan who grew up in the 90s, because Sam's question is, I saw a Spurs podcast doing this, so I thought I'd ask you guys, what's your favourite defeat of the season?
How do I make Oscar Bob the answer to this too?
Losing Oscar Bob for the season.
I'm not pleased they lost Oscar Bob for the season. I think, I had a bit of a think about this because it is a mad question, but I like it. Actually, I've already mentioned it. The defeat at Anfield, because I think from how bad that could have been to how bad City fans' expectations going into that were, and they sort of gutsed it out and stayed in the game. With 20 minutes left, it was a bit, ooh.
Yeah,
I think that noise conveys a lot. But yeah, so probably that.
Yeah, Guardiola does that impress us as well. He makes noises, because I get messages from Sam Lee who says, "How am I supposed to transcribe this?" And then it'd just be a noise that he makes.
Is it the day to day where he says, "Could you sum it up in 5 words?" And he just goes, "No, a noise."
He's really sorry, Guardiola. I was trying to think, what's his noise that's got really pro. He started tutting like. Doing like a sort of like a lip smacking tut, which
Last season it was very much mm-mm. Yeah. Mm-mm. What does that mean, Pep? Come on, tell us. Yeah. Chris, any what's your favourite defeat of the season? There's plenty to pick from.
Well, it's obviously a bit of a contradiction in terms, in it, which makes it kind of an interesting question, I guess. Mine would be the defeat to Brighton Not because it showed any green shoots of recovery or signs of encouragement, just because it enabled me to adopt that niche position of smug loser. We went 1-0 up, and at no point did I think we were ever going to win that game. It was like people going, "Oh, we're bad." It's like, no, we're not going to win this. We're shit, but we're winning. You'll see. And then when it went 1-1, it was like there was even more weight of inevitability about it. And then when it's 2-1, it was like, yeah, we're shit, but at least I knew we were shit, and I'm right. Wise about how shit we are. So yeah.
Mine that stands out is the Sporting game, and the reason for that is I was playing football. It was a Tuesday evening, so I played football, and I successfully avoided the result. So I'd done everything to avoid it in terms of change the car radio when I got out so it wasn't on 5 Live, so there was no updates coming in, I wouldn't accidentally get a score update, notifications off on the phone, like mute all the WhatsApp groups, you know, no, don't go on Twitter, don't go on social media. Got home, like, had recorded it on the TV and was gonna watch it as live. And there's a big discourse between me and Sam Lee about how you watch games and like whether you catch up and all that sort of stuff. And so I was like, right, I'm doing it your way before we do the podcast. And I sat down, press play on the recording. About a minute in, my phone goes and it was an unknown number. And so I answered it. And somebody from the 5 Live Lates team phoned me up to say, hi, David, any chance you could come on and talk about City's 4-1 loss tonight in a few minutes? And I was like, how have I managed to avoid the result? And then an unknown number has spoiled it for me. So there we go.
That's just reminded me, I was in the cinema all the way through the Bournemouth game. So that was quite good.
The times when City have lost and we were doing anything else this season has been are our favourite ones, I guess.
Watching Wild Robot. All right.
I don't know if anyone ever watched any reruns of The Likely Lads, but what you've just described there, David, is pretty much a modern rewrite of an entire episode of The Likely Lads. But whatever happened to them?
I'll get on to the very good. I'll get on to the bosses at BBC, get them to recommission a reboot of it. But now that's it for this episode of the Blue Moon Podcast. Thank you very much for listening, and thanks to my guests for this one, Dom Farrell.
Thank you, mate.
And Chris Higginbottom.
Thank you for having me.
I hope you are both feeling better very soon. There is a clip of this week's Nostalgia episode coming up. That was City fan Glyn Billington picking out his 5 games that made me. You can hear the full thing by joining our Patreon. You'll also get ad-free topical episodes every week as well. That's all at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. I'll be back next week to look ahead to the games with Ipswich and PSG. See you then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
Awful. Just looking at the clock. It was going backwards, not forwards. You know what I mean? It's just, we weren't very good in the first half. We just looked... I mean, everybody expected us to roll them over after what we'd done to Madrid. And as you know, Italian teams, finals, nerves. It's a big ask. So nobody goes into a Champions League final and wallops anybody, do they? Let's be honest. They're always tight games. It was awful, David, if I'm honest. It was awful. At half time, I took myself off. I was in the stadium 2 hours and 40 minutes before kickoff anyway, after that hell of a bus journey like many of us had. The big open concourse, and I took myself off to the furthest corner and I just stood there for 20 minutes or so at half time, just having a word with myself and thinking about it, thinking, going back to Porto. I was in Porto and I remember being sat on the back of the bus after we got beat, and I just didn't want, and I was on the last plane back out of Porto, back out to Manchester, so I sat in the airport for a long time and you're thinking about it, and I just didn't want that feeling again. It's an awful feeling, but obviously we scored and we held on. Like I say, goal had a charm life at the end.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast, and join us again next time for another episode.